B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. Seven-five, the Fanatic.
Hey, y'all. Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Haiti's the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kind of hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody, in this tumultuous sports world. It's the Mike Missinelli Show, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio. Ollie from Comcast. All right, that's first of all, top news story is Brandon Brooks out for the year with an Achilles. Now, where the Eagles go from there, this is very problematic. And the easy solution everybody's talking about is Jason Peters, and you plug him in at right guard. Now, I don't know if that will happen. I don't know if they're interested in that happening. I don't know if he would even be willing to have that happen. But now the Eagles are, that's a major blow to them. And we're going to have proof of that a little later in statistical value with Brandon Brooks, who last year may have been best offensive lineman in the league. So to say that that's a small thing is underplaying it considerably. That's a major, major blow for the Philadelphia Eagles. So we'll discuss what they can do about it. You can't just plug in a rookie. You can't plug in Jordan Mailata. That would be disastrous, I think. So you're going to have to do better than that. So we'll see what they do. All right. Now, secondly, I'm going to be bouncing around here. I'm trying to avoid the Major League Baseball thing, but I can't, right? So here's what the conclusion is probably going to be. They're not going to play. The commissioner with a flip-flop. Here's what I think happened. I think the owners, all this time, have been wanting to spring the 48 games on the players because that served two masters. It served a loss that the owners could take, but also that they didn't have to pay out a lot of money to these players. And they positioned themselves for the next collective bargaining agreement. So they throw it out going 48 games. The players will never go for that. Thinking they were going to turn it down. Thinking then that public opinion would be anti-player because the player... Here's the strategy. We'll throw out 48 games. There's no way those fools will go for 48 games. We know that. So now the American public goes, they're selfish baseball players. Except the players played it the right way. The players go, tell us when and where. Right? The owners didn't expect to get that answer. Right? So now the owners are going, uh-oh. They called our bluff. Now what? Because what we know is that eight owners do not want to play baseball this season. And that's all they need to scuttle a season. In which case, the owners will not take a total loss. They'll take their tax loss. They won't get the revenue coming in. But they position themselves by not having baseball with public pressure to get an advantage in the next collective bargaining agreement. Because then they dare the players to sit out longer. Because at that point, the whole public could be against the players. Now, as I told you yesterday, and as we talked about this yesterday, I don't care anymore about baseball. I don't care if they play. So I'm trying to figure this out, and I'm trying to put my heart in the heart of the players, because I don't think the players want to really play at this pace either. I don't think the players want to be forced to play a 48-game schedule, have this shoehorned in. But I think they're hiding behind the veil of this union protection, and they're fighting for their rights. And they know that it's not going to hurt them that much with the public if they just sit out the rest of the season. Because right now, it's the owners who can scuttle the 48-game plan. So they've played it perfectly, the players. And it's just a matter of them risking what the public is going to think about him. And we talked about that for how many days, Tyrone? We're not going to hold it against him anymore, are we?
Not anymore, no.
Not anymore. We're going to be, it's going to be replaced by other sports. Baseball's going to be an afterthought. It's not like we're going to have any resentment towards baseball players because it's still a nice thing to do in the summer, and it's always going to be a nice thing to do in the summer. So they're not going to lose that much public clout. People aren't going to stay away from the ballpark to spite them.
No.
Because they're spiting themselves. They're cut off the nose to spite their face, fans are. That's what they realize.
For sure. I do wonder why they did the I can do whatever, I can have a season, I can make mm-hmm. you guys have a season mm-hmm. so early. Because by doing this, people were able to do math. And I think the owners underestimated that. There's no reason they shouldn't have, right now, a 70-game season.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason.
Yeah.
What would be the reason to not have a 70-game season outside of what you just said, they don't want to have a season?
Yeah, well, that's the point. They have scuttled all attempts at having a compromise season. And so now the owners arrived at the point they wanted to arrive. All right, short season, we'll save a ton of money. We'll still have baseball out there, make a couple dollars out of it, right? And the players will basically lose, and we don't have to pay full salaries, and we save this whole year. And so this is what they've set up. And so now that their bluff was called, they don't want the 48-game season anymore. The owners just don't want baseball. And that's the end of that.
So I know that commissioners, you can explain it to me and to the people. The commissioner I know works for the owners.
Yes.
But a commissioner like Stern before and mm-hmm. Silver now with the NBA can provide ideas mm-hmm. that will make rich people follow. What I mean mm-hmm. is you can lead by being very innovative or smart and having good relationships. Why can't Manfred figure out a way to get these owners to do what's best for the game? Because I believe that a 70-game season, while not perfect like the half of 81, which we all would have been on board with, would be better than the 48 and definitely better than no baseball at all. Why can't Manfred convince the owners to fall in line and do what's, quote, best for the game?
Because when you compare it to other sports, it's like the other sports, Stern made the players know to feel like if they didn't comply with certain things, that sport was going to be in trouble. I mean, that's the reason why the salary cap came in the first place, because the sport was in trouble. So that mantra has followed the NBA. Baseball owners own a piece of Americana, at least in their mind. So they go, there's no commissioner that's going to tell us what to do. We own America's pastime franchise. There's no commissioner that's going to lay the law down. The days of Bowie Kuhn are gone, man. The owners made sure they got commissioners in there that'd be totally beholden to them. And in a large extent, so the NFL.
Yes, that's true.
And so they pay these guys handsomely to be a commissioner to stay out of the way. Or else their compensation goes. Like, got a guy Goodell's making $43 million. Will he go buck against the owners that are paying him $43 million?
Never.
No, so that's the way they've carved it out. So a guy like Manfred goes, what am I going to do, strong arm these guys? I'll be out of my ass in 3 days. And he likes being the baseball commissioner.
Yeah, I know he waited a long time under C-League and working in the league to become the. It's just, it just feels. And I agree with you, by the way. No baseball. We'll move on. We'll get the NBA mm-hmm. back. We'll get the NHL. Some people will watch MLS. Uh-huh. Some people will watch other stuff. Somebody's going to try NASCAR, et cetera. We'll have enough. And then football mm-hmm. will start. We'll have enough to get us through. But isn't there something wrong with 4th of July coming and going and no baseball, not even a spring, quote, spring training? Just there's something about it that will feel empty for
me. It's distasteful. But in the reality of what we've gone through, and you know, the virus and the pandemic and when we're going to start sports again and all these fledgling plans and all this thing, I told you yesterday I almost don't want baseball at this point. You know, it will be clearer on my conscience to not have baseball and let the months sort everything out with these guys. Because I don't have to have baseball to live. I got other things that are coming my way. I'm consumed with living through these pandemic times. So it would be nice, but would it be nice in 48 games? It's like such a change. Like I said this from the start. I didn't know if I wanted any kind of abbreviated thing and changing up the divisions and all the bastardization they would have to do to make a baseball season. It's like Let's just come back next year. This year's been wiped out for me.
You're not wrong. I wanted the 81. I wanted the half. Basically, I can do with a virus. Mm-hmm. And if this season was getting wiped out because of the virus, I would be completely okay. I want to make that clear. What bothers me that it was over money. Mm-hmm. That it's over, in my opinion, the owners can't sacrifice 1 year when they're asking, when so many of us literally are sacrificing mm-hmm. right this very second. Mm-hmm. They can't do their part to sacrifice.
No, you're right. No, sacrifice in baseball doesn't exist. Hasn't existed for a long time. It's the one sport that never sacrifices. It's the most selfish sport that we have. Right? So, like, when they put 81 games out, right, they're going, well, the owners are going, wow, these guys want to play so bad. It's their profession. They want to show off in the batter's box and all this stuff. They'll take our deal at 81 at 70% instead of the prorated salaries. And the players go, no, we won't. Right? Because now, if you really wanted to play, if you really had a love of the sport, you would play. But those guys don't have a love of the sport enough to say, okay, we'll do the 81. They don't love the sport. They have become independent contractor businessmen that don't love the sport. They love it to an extent. When they're playing, they're going to give you their best. But it's like when they're away from it, it's like, no, I don't love the sport that much to take a bad deal.
Right.
And that's what has happened here. You know, the owners thought the players would be just biting at their shoes to get back on the field. And at every turn, the union goes, nah, we don't have to play. Yeah, we got enough bank. You know, even the minimum salary guys made $500,000 last year. They're wise and frugal. You know, we'll come back next year. As long as because if we give in to these guys, they'll set the salary structure forever. And they'll lock us out. And they'll shut down the game next year until they get a better collective bargaining agreement. Because that's happened once before. You know, right. And then what happened with the collusion came in. You know, they didn't admit collusion, but collusion came in to stop all these free agent signings that were going crazy way back when.
Yeah, I remember reading about that, and that got proven, right?
Yeah. And I think Bill Giles was the guy that broke it because he signed Lance Parrish as a free agent when nobody was signing anybody.
About that.
All right. So anyway, we'll talk about it. And also, so we have Andrew Brandt coming on today, and he's into sports legal matters heavily as the director of the sports law of Villanova, and he'll try to make some sense out of it. And then now the last thing I want to say, because Doug Peterson had a conference call here, and I want to play it. Can we play his comment on Alshon Jeffrey? It's kind of eye-opening about Alshon, and he's talking about well, I'll let you hear it.
Alshon's one of the guys. The dialogue that he's had in the receiver room, being able to converse with some of the young players that we have on our roster. But yeah, he is a big part of the process moving forward, and he's a great leader, and he's going to be able to help the young players come along.
Okay, now, he's not a great leader, okay? It's mind-boggling that he would go to that extent and try to BS us when we clearly know that he's not a great leader. Does he have anything left in the tank? Maybe. Is it worth it to bring him back? No. It's not, because if you bring him back, you again, disrespect your quarterback. Now, they already did that by drafting Jalen Hurts. So here now, all of a sudden, to bring this guy back who's a great leader, who we know is not a great leader, which calls into question how I feel about Doug Peterson. And whether he's really has any influence on this show at all. And if he does, what does he have against Carson Wentz? Now, I know everybody loves him. Dougie P won a Super Bowl. But clearly, I can see that there's something about this Wentz dude that he doesn't like. And I'm going to go further with a theory here. Is it possible that he looks at Carson Wentz as... Consider what Doug Peterson was in this league, a career backup, mostly third stringer, was never the chosen one. Is it possible that he looks at a guy like Carson Wentz as a chosen one before he earned a chosen one? And so he goes, that leaves a better taste in my mouth. I worked with chosen ones. I worked with Brett Favre. This guy's a chosen one? Am I going too far?
I don't know. Don't come into this league.
No.
Don't come into this league with a star on your forehead before you own a star, because I worked my butt off as a backup in this league for a lot of years, and I don't appreciate it. And that's why I love Nick Foles. I don't know. I'm just saying.
How's everyone doing?
610-632-0975. That's how you get in. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, 620. Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Time to start today's Twitter poll, which is brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons. If you need some outdoor power equipment, don't go to a box store. Go to Paul B. Moyer and Sons, because they can guide you into the right product and tell you exactly how to use it, all that stuff, personal service. Order online at paulbmoyer.com or by phone with Safe Contactless Pickup in Doylestown, PA. Natalie Eganoff.
Thanks, Mike. Today's poll, over 100 votes on this one early. Does Doug Peterson calling Alshon Jeffrey a team leader bother you? 42% say yes, 50% say no.
50% say no.
58%.
58% say no.
They're not bothered.
All right. Listen, that's desperation speaking. You think the guy can help you? First of all, he's beyond his prime, okay? He might be able to help you a little bit. But is it worth it to, like, bring a guy back who has been detrimental to the growth of your quarterback, as far as most people are concerned? I don't think it is. So there are two theories here. But one theory is that Doug is daring Carson to make it work with this guy because Doug harbors some kind of hidden resentment for Wentz. And we can talk about that psychologically for days, what that could be. Or that Howie Roseman has made it clear to the head coach, hey, Holmes, listen, I ain't eating the money. Make it work. And the way Peterson's trying to make it work is by throwing propaganda out there and trying to get inferior minds to believe his crap about Alshon being a great leader. So there you go. Pick your theory. 2 o'clock hours brought to us by Ferguson HVAC Lyon Conklin. Attention HVAC contractors. Visit Ferguson's County location on North 7th Street in Philadelphia today for equipment, parts, and supplies for every heating and cooling job. Here's what we got. We got Andrew Brandt coming on at 3 o'clock. Hembo at 3:30 with some statistics on Brandon Brooks. They're not going to make you feel good. But we're trying to, you know, give you an idea of the extent of the loss of Brandon Brooks for next year. And also Tim McManus will chime in on what Doug had to say at 4:10. So heavy day for guests and your phone calls at 610-622-0975. Greg in Bethlehem. Greg, you're trying to be first every day now?
Oh, my God.
Look at you. What's going on with you, man?
I can't believe I'm leading off again. Wow. This is is truly an honor. You know, as far as this Peterson comment, you know, I'm not sure. I get the feeling like Doug's bulb is pretty dim, I think. You know, I don't give him credit for thinking beyond what's on the paper in front of him. I think probably Howie has said that, look, you know, we're stuck with this guy. Make it work. Mm-hmm. And Peterson just figured, well, let me say this. You know, without thinking.
Yeah, he does that a lot, by the way. He says stuff thinking that other people will buy what he's saying. And he doesn't come off that genuine when he says stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then he gives that goofy smile. And, you know, my grandfather used to have a saying, smiling like a jackass eating greenbriars. You know, he gives that goofy smile, and he thinks everything is fine. And I don't know how it's going to affect the rest of the team. I think it depends on whether Alshon behaves himself or, you know, I think if he can play, and I don't know if he can, then, people will get over it.
Yeah, but we've seen it. What is he going to have, a rebirth? He is what he is. He's slow, big possession receiver. And to me, it's not where you put it on a scale. The detrimental leadership that he provides is not worth the minimal impact that he's going to give you.
No,
especially
I agree.
For the quarterback. The quarterback needed to be helped by getting this guy out of here. And they just don't have enough respect for the quarterback. Like, if Brett Favre didn't want a guy, he's gone. You know? If Pat Mahomes didn't want a guy, we think Andy Reid's going to have him around?
Well, right. They just made the mistake of signing him last year for some crazy reason, which made... Yeah.
I don't think that they counted on him losing it as much as he did.
No, probably not. He's deteriorated. But who knows? Maybe this year will be different.
All right. Now, what was that? The jackass eating a what? Greenbrier.
Jackass eating greenbriars.
What are greenbriars?
They're thorny.
What?
They're thorny bushes. You know, when the donkeys eat them, it makes their lips curl up.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do we find greenbriars?
Well, my grandfather knew where they were. I don't know. It's just something that stuck with me over the years that he used to say when he.
Okay. All right. Well, that's sounds like an old school saying. Like a jackass eating greenbriars. I just never heard of a greenbrier. You know what a greenbrier is now?
No, I just Googled it, though.
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, it just says it can be eaten raw or cooked. So people can eat them, too.
It's edible?
It looks like it. It's
like a vine. Yeah, it's a vine. I think it's a vine, like ground cover vine.
Yeah. It says that people can eat them, too, so not only donkeys.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never heard that saying in my life, either. But maybe I'll incorporate it in.
Starts out as a lovely little vine.
Yeah.
Glossy green heart-shaped leaves. If you don't know any better, you may even think it's a wild form of ivy or morning glory. Leave it alone, though, and it will soon take over your yard, twining around trees and filling corners with giant piles of brambles.
Perhaps you've seen it, but you thought it was something else. But you thought it was...
I see it now. I think I've seen this in my garden. So you need to pull that S.
Before the donkeys eat it.
There are no donkeys in my yard. But, yeah. All right, let's go Sean in South Jersey. Sean, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Sean.
Mike, what's going on,
what's
man?
What's up, Sean?
Hey, are we talking about snitch Alshon?
We don't know that he's a snitch, but we know he's not a leader. I mean, I think we know he's not a leader.
They call him 6'9 Alshon back in the day.
They call him what?
Never mind. Anyway, I think that it's just too late. I think the talent on the team, man, I think they want to keep him around. They can't dish him out. What do you think?
Well, what would you do here? What would you do with this situation? You would get rid of him and eat the money. Now, they clearly don't want to do that, right?
No.
But you have to weigh this against how detrimental it's going to be to your quarterback. It's clear that those guys aren't on the same page.
So Parsons too nice is what we're saying.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, I guess he's too. Well, I don't know what he could say. He can't come out and say, I want this guy on my team, because I don't think he's earned that kind of clout yet.
Right. You might be right. You might be right.
But he should have enough clout with his damn head coach. And that's my thing. It's like...
Coach is tooting his horn, so he's in the spotlight. He's good.
Well, one hand, he toots the horn of Wentz, and then he comes back and toots the horn of Alshon by saying he's a great leader, and he's been really good in the rooms with our younger players. Where's this been? On Zoom?
Overblown, though?
What's he been, like, on Zoom every day with the young players, counseling them?
Yeah.
No, I'm not seeing that happening.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see anything from Alshon.
Alshon has had good dialogue with the young players so far, Doug Peterson said. He's a great leader.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Any of that kind of stuff in the locker is bad for your quarterback.
Yeah, listen, I know I'm not fostering a popular opinion here because people remember this guy won a Super Bowl, right?
So I'm
going against the wave here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm 100%. Can I make a side note about the Zeke COVID stuff?
Sure.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of aftermath happens with some of these athletes that get COVID. You know, like the whatever's going on with lungs and whatnot afterwards.
Yeah. So,
he's going to suffer from shrinkage 100%.
Shrinkage?
He's making a bad joke on the way out.
Well, people got too far.
I think he was trying. I think he thought it would land a little bit better, but the it didn't lead in properly. Well,
COVID,
he didn't lead into
does
that
COVID
joke
make
properly.
You shrink?
No.
He just.
But what was the connection?
There was none.
He was just trying to make it a joke, but it didn't.
Oh,
it didn't land. Needs to work on the delivery.
Yeah, the and Elliot has been recovered from
COVID.
The virus.
Yeah.
We don't know if something's going to happen down the road, but he's fine. And we should, even though he's on the Cowboys, we should want him to be fine. Like, I don't want the guy to get COVID. I don't want him to get sick.
Yeah, of course.
I just want the Eagles to beat them.
Yes. That story broke yesterday. It had no impact on me. Oh, it's a shame. You know, what can I say?
Yeah.
It's like, it'll benefit me or my team.
The more troubling thing was he's supposed to be a leader. Remember, him and the quarterback had that party.
Yeah.
Where the cops had to come.
That's what I was thinking about.
And that's what I thought about. It's that, you see, and what I like to see is, for the most part, the Eagles guys, you see them in small groups working out and mostly outdoors and not throwing parties. And that, meanwhile, the Cowboys guys are throwing parties, and surprise, surprise, one of them catches COVID from throwing it inside the house party.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I took from it. I don't want the guy to get sick or die or anything. It's just, I'm like, I'm glad that my team seems a little bit more focused before today. Now I don't feel good at all. Between the Brooks thing and this coach, I am now very scared of the Eagles. I am. This troubles me, what the coach said today. It troubles me.
It troubles you for what reason?
It troubles me because, okay, I'll give him every benefit of the doubt, Alshon. He's still a guy who clearly is not 100% on board with the quarterback. So now think about what this offseason does. You draft a quarterback in the second round, which undermines them both in the locker room and in the city. I think part of the reason why people are okay with, so far in the poll, calling him a leader is because they don't look at the quarterback as valuable because the organization doesn't value him. And I think what you're doing is now you're calling him a leader. He was the first one to call Rager. So now as soon as Wentz misses an open guy, which is going to happen over the course of a season, Alshon's in some young guy's ear about problems with the quarterback and how he's this, that, and the other thing. And that fractures the locker room. So Wentz is doing his part. He's working with the young guys in the summer doing his part. But in the meantime, in one ear, you hear the quarterback saying, hey, on third and short, you got to get the hot route. You cut blah, blah, blah. On the other ear, it's Alshon saying, man, this guy stinks. You should be working with Hurts. He the real quarterback.
Well, and see, that's the thing that a head coach should take into consideration. And he doesn't.
Right.
So, again, it's back to the two theories. Is he saying, like, this hidden resentment for Wentz? All right, prove yourself. I'm not going to cater to you. Or is it Howie saying, listen, Doug, you got to carry him. I can't eat the money. Which one are you leaning to?
I think it's both. For sure he's back because of the money. They want to do, they're going to have some cap trouble going forward if they do not re-sign some guys this year, use this cap space to absorb it for the future, because they're top heavy, and Brooks is one of the guys that is highly paid, and now he's out for the season. So they do have some cap issues coming, possibly. So I don't think they can afford to eat it, and they even offered a draft pick, apparently, to other teams, saying, hey, if you take this guy, we'll give you like a six. And teams were like, no, we don't want the money. So I do, but I also think that this coach does not value this quarterback. You notice it by the horizontal nature of the offense versus the vertical nature. This is a quarterback who wants to go vertical. And they do, and I'm not against 12 personnel, but they do a bunch of double tight horizontal stuff for a vertical quarterback. That tells you the coach doesn't value the quarterback. Holmgren would not do this to Favre. And this is before Favre won. Favre didn't win a Super Bowl as a rookie. It took time with Favre. Favre didn't win one Super Bowl. In 100 years, he won one. It's not like Favre won 90 Super Bowls.
No, you're right. I'm trying to hold back on this because I know what people are thinking. And people are thinking, how dare you bite the hand that fed you with a Super Bowl, right? But I look at this and I go, okay, they drafted Hurts, first of all, with the idea of drafting him. Rankled me. Secondly, the yuck fest that the head coach did after he drafted him rankled me. And now the BS he's trying to throw that Alshon actually is a leader. And all these things are counter to the grain to your most important player on your team right now.
Yeah, it's still like there's some divisiveness that they haven't figured out yet. And he's not even really trying to give any sort of message of unity to save face.
Right, the coach can fake it.
The coach he can fake it. He could say, yeah, Alshon's going to come back. We can't wait to figure out how we're going to work him in, how we're going to work him in when he's healthy. And he's like not even trying. It's just like saying he's a leader is kind of just, you know, blowing smoke.
Like a smack in the face to the quarterback. This guy's a leader. Not you, Carson. Alshon. Like, what?
Right. And so, now, back to this. Do you buy into my theory at all about the hidden resentment from a guy who was a career backup to a guy who came into the league from North Dakota State anointed as a star?
Yes.
You do.
For two reasons. One, because of the Malcolm Jenkins thing, he's no longer with the team, and they say he butted heads with the defensive coordinator last year and would be vocal about it. Quarterbacks, including from Tom Brady all the way down, are headstrong. They say Carson Wentz, it's been noted, is a headstrong guy.
Uh-huh.
That's why he changes things at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And when he's in that room, if the quarterback's saying X and he sees Y, Carson Wentz apparently says it. Because quarterbacks are headstrong. I think Doug takes that, internalizes that a little bit. As a backup, as a guy who didn't get, you know, the love, who is this guy to question me? To push back against me. I think there's something out there. Because that is out there, that Carson. But it's not unique to Carson.
I feel the same thing. I started thinking that way. So the overly, you know, when he was going overboard with the love for Foles, I started to go, that seems peculiar.
Yep.
It probably kind of gives him some sort of, like, solace internally.
I can work with a backup who was just like me and win.
Well, yeah.
This guy who comes into the league and he's anointed as a star.
Right.
And telling me that he wants to do this and that. And when Foles came in and he just ran the offense. He painted by numbers.
Yes.
Foles doesn't change at the line. He paints by numbers.
All right, let's challenge Eagle fans here. Eagle fans, this is the theory I threw out there, man. Like, I'm not trying to get on your last nerve because I'm attacking the guy who won a Super Bowl. I'm just asking you plainly, just a little barroom discussion. Do you believe this head coach has hidden resentment for this quarterback? Simple question.
It's deep.
610-632-0975. It's got to Luke in Brooklyn. Luke, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Luke.
Mike, how you doing, man?
What's up, Luke?
Not too much. Well, I'd love to answer your question if I get a chance to.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make a quick point about the idea of Jason Peters playing guard if we resign him next to Dillard. And I don't think that's realistic at all. Because, so you're telling me that, you know,
he would play on the other side. He would play in Brooks' spot.
Right.
He would play next to Lane Johnson.
Okay, well, either way, the idea that we're going to have the top edge rushers in the NFL going against Dillard, Peters' replacement, while Peters is sitting on the line, you know, chip blocking with Kelce, running after linebackers. If that really happened, I think we can say that Jason Peters is the greatest teammate of all time, that the man has no ego. You know what I mean? I just think...
You're not buying it then.
You're not buying it.
He would come in subordinate. It's a great view because I thought the same thing. Would he even buy into it? He did say, though, the last that we heard from him is that he was willing to move the guard and help the team, whatever it took, is what he said. But could it be this? Could they go, well, Dillard's not ready to play left tackle in this league, but we can hide him at right guard. And if we sign Jason Peters, we'll play him at left tackle, and we'll play I forget his name, Dillard at right guard. The only problem with that is, you know, Peters is going to get hurt from time to time, and then what do you do?
Well,
see what I'm saying?
That sounds like something I'd be more for, because I think we all I think we all agree here that Peters is still a starter. I mean, he might not be the best starter at tackle in the league. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's always what the better solution is. You could have an easier time of it moving Dillard to guard, where he's got Lane Johnson and Kelsey to help him out there. But then you got Sayamalu and Jason Peters on the left side. You say, is that good enough? Because Jason Peters is going to get hurt.
And then
what do I do?
I don't think it's a great situation either way, but, you know, at least your solution, I think I'm into more. I just don't think there's any way he signs to play.
It's a legitimate concern. I thought the same thing. Would he be willing to do it? Saying it is one thing. Doing it is another.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, bro.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Luke. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking of doing. They could go out and sign a veteran guard. You know, they can find one and keep the thing the same. Or they could have convinced Peters to play right guard. I don't know. What do you think he'd be into that?
He has said it in the past. I think the tough part is, I think he thinks he's still better than Dillard.
Okay.
So, and that puts a...
How do you feel then about him being the starting left tackle, Dillard being the right guard?
Now, my one issue is that the one knock on Dillard is power.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's working on getting stronger, and that's the easiest thing to fix. But a guy who wasn't great run blocking at tackle, I don't think he is developed enough to be an effective guard. I think Pryor or one of these guys who has actually worked at guard will end up being better.
All right.
If they have full-time reps.
We'll see if there's any early indications on what they would do. Tim McManus will join us at 4:10, maybe clear some of that stuff up. In the meantime, your call is 610-620-9975. Andrew Brand at 3 to make some sense of this baseball situation. And Hembo with some Hembo stats today. And then McManus. It's the Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, it's 2:45, Mike Missinelli Show on at 97.5, The Fanatic. 610-632-0975. A little later in this show, I don't know when I'm going to pop it out, but I am going to pop it out. It's a very provocative question that deals with the Mike Gundy situation at Oklahoma State.
Ooh. Okay.
It's heavy, heavy, heavy. It's going to be heavy.
Oh, boy.
But I think it has to be thrown out there for discussion. So we'll talk about that a little later. In the meantime, let's go to Carlos in Bensalem. What's up, Carlos?
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think Doug has something against Carson. It's like he preferred Nick because Nick is like a career backup, and I guess he identifies with him.
Yeah, a little kinship with Nicky.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, I appreciate he gave us a Super Bowl, but I'm not just going to let him off the hook because he gave us one Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then the drafting of Jalen Hurts, what is that? Like, they keep on trying to say, oh, we're a quarterback factory. Oh, you know, we needed Carson Wentz's backup. You could have got a backup in the 5th round. You could have got a backup in the 6th round. You could have tried to sign Joe Flacco. You could have, that doesn't register with me. Like, you're basically telling Carson, yeah, you're our guy, but you're not really our guy.
I think you're absolutely right. I think and we discussed this when the Hurts thing for several days. They don't really believe that Carson is the long-haul dude.
Yeah, I don't think they do. And
so, therefore, they're not going to cater to him along the way. Like, they're not going to not draft Jalen Hurts in the 2nd round. They're not going to not sign or keep Alshon Jeffrey because they think, well, why should we cater to a guy that we don't actually believe in? All the pieces fit like a jigsaw puzzle to me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I can appreciate what Doug has done for us, but I can also call him out on his BS, and I think he's
Well, but he's listen, he might be right, Carlos. I don't know. But it seems awful odd that you wouldn't back a guy that you have and have cultivated as your guy and do everything it took. But he might be right. He might like years down the road, he might be saying, "What, Jalen Hurts? Oh, what a stroke of genius that was drafting him."
Yeah, you know? It might be. But do you think it's? I don't know. I think it was. It's Howie and Jeffrey that maybe like Carson more than Doug. I don't know. I get that. I think Howie, you know, he wanted to draft Jalen Hurts too. But I also think maybe.
I think they've all sold out on him. I got to be honest with you. If ownership and the general manager really were backing Carson Wentz, they would not be taking no Jalen Hurts in the second round.
Yeah, you're right. Well, that's all I really.
And that's the thing that, like, if I'm Carson Wentz and I look at all these stuff, it's hard for me not to think that this organization is not really behind me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right, Mike. Well, thank you for the time. You know, right. You and Natalie and Tyrone have a good day.
All right, Carlos. Yeah, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Like, if I'm the guy. I go, that's awful peculiar. You know? And it's hard, like, if you don't have 100% support from your dudes, like the hierarchy, then how do you feel about performing?
I don't think you can, because no quarterback's going to be perfect. And this roster's not a perfect roster, and they just got worse by losing the best guard, arguably, in football. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to have middle pressure, for example. You're asking the quarterback to do so many things, but you're not fully backing him. That second-round pick could have been some player that could help him, even if it was a defensive end or whatever player that helps him get the ball more, whatever it may be. You did. Instead, you backed him up, which means that if things go right, he'll never play. I think you've put him in a tough spot. And then to come back today and then call a guy, why couldn't Doug say this today? We hope Alshon comes back healthy. His injuries looks like it's healing. He's on the right track, and hopefully he can contribute this year. No one would look too much into that quote, would they, if he had just said that?
Yeah. No, instead he said he's a real leader, which we already know that the quarterback doesn't think he's much of a leader.
Right, because he's going behind his back.
Yeah, so in other words, he's slapping the back of the head of Carson Wentz.
Again.
Well, and he's, like, overcompensating.
Yeah. Listen. I can't sit here and say their judgment is wrong, all right? I don't know. It seems awful peculiar to me that you invest so much energy in cultivating a franchise quarterback and then you turn around on a dime, right? But they may have decided somewhere along the line, and I'm talking to all of them now, talking to owner, general manager, coach. This dude, A, is not reliable enough physically. B, he just doesn't do enough in this kind of NFL, and we see where this kind of NFL's going. And so, we had a plan. The best laid plans sometimes don't work out. We don't have to tell the fans that, but we'll just act accordingly. And that could be what they're doing. And the act accordingly is, let's just carry on with business without worrying about cultivating the perfect team for this quarterback that we don't believe in anyway.
That's a good point, unfortunately. And now, I don't think Raider's going to start.
He's not?
Based on what he said today.
What did he say about Rager today? Can we hear it?
Yep.
All right, let's hear about Jalen Rager.
Right now, you know, he's going to come in, he's going to learn one position, and he's going to learn from DeSean Jackson. The playbook is extensive, you know, and we just got to see what he's taken from the offseason. And then once we see his growth, then we can use him in multiple spots.
Yeah, I kind of thought that would happen. Deshaun's going to get hurt. That's the reason why we're checking Rager into the lineup anyway, right? We thought Deshaun was going to be the starter.
Well,
right?
I thought what they might try to do is be creative, do something different, and perhaps put Deshaun in the slot.
Yeah,
with that speed, Ortega Whiteside, because he is a second rounder. They're not going to give up on him on the one side.
Yeah,
and your rookie more speed on the outside. And then on plays where you go 12 personnel, then you take Rager out and you put Deshaun outside because he has, as a veteran, can move around. That's what I thought they would do.
So as it stands right now, Deshaun's your one on the outside.
Ortega Whiteside's on the other side. And
or Jeffrey.
Moore. Well, Jeffrey, he's going to start on the pup, though. He's not going to be healthy.
Okay, that's right. All right, so
Ortega Whiteside's going to start.
Ortega Whiteside is the starter.
On one side.
Who's in the slot? Ward?
And right now, yeah.
That's not a change from last year.
No, that's the problem. Like, Deshaun would be obviously a change. Deshaun Bean would be a change.
This fresh replenishment that we were crowing about in the draft, it's not even going to come from fruition right away.
No, it's going to take time, and then he has to learn. My thing is, sometimes you just throw a guy in the deep end. We're going to move Deshaun around. Like, I understand that when their base is 3-wide, and then they go 12 personnel. I'm saying when you're 3-wide, Deshaun in the slot, Rager outside, or thinking wide side. Then when you go 12, Rager, okay, you're young, you come off the field, and Deshaun's going to play outside as long as he's healthy. And then we'll work in Greg Ward as the fourth guy because he's reliable.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it would be. Like, throw him in the deep end. This Aja's going to learn one spot. And how come these other guys learn? These other guys start. Last year, these guys start on other teams, these rookies. I know they don't all have success, but they play. They come right in and play. Now he's backing up Deshaun, and then once in week six, if Deshaun tweaks a hamstring, then he'll start, and then he'll be in and out of life. I don't know. We're going to move Deshaun around. This guy's going to play outside to start with us, and we'll use him on some punt returns, and boom. And let's run an offense where we can get vertical for my quarterback. Because now you have two fast guys on the field at one time. I didn't hear that from him. I heard that Alshon's a damn leader.
You should get a comment from Carson. Carson, what do you think about that? Just me and you. Let's walk to church. Talk to me. All right, 3 o'clock hour. Headed by Age Brandt at 3 o'clock, talking about this the legal issues of this baseball thing and what really has happened here as we face a summer without baseball. Mike Missanelli Show, 610-622-0975 to get your place in line. And we're back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.